There you go.
Thank you. All right, it is 9:15 on July 21st, 2021. I will call to order the PCJWSA Board Workshop. And I will call the roll. Cameron Bogus.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
Ann Price.
Here.
For the record, Sean Carlton is not yet with us, and we hope that he will be. Otherwise, all directors are present. We are having a workshop for the purpose of communication, and Rob Mills is here to help us conduct that workshop. So based on that, Rob, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, and thanks for your time this morning. I'm real time conscious, 9:15 to 11:15 this was scheduled for. I promise we'll go no longer than that. But periodically, I'll have to look around and see how we're doing. So it's not
that
I'm not paying attention.
That's
fine. I'm just distracted.
Understood.
So your request as a board was for some help with team building and communication.
There's Sean.
Not uncommon in special districts, if I may say so. As some of you know, I've been doing a thing called the Board Practices Assessment for about the last 6 years with SDAO as a part-time consultant, a little management assessment tool that I developed with SDAO. And over the course of those years, I personally conducted about 130 of those assessments with special districts. You have the equivalent of special districts up in Washington State. They go by a slightly different name, but they are the equivalent. So you're familiar with the concept.
And, I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
But about 130 of them, and all different types, all different sizes: fire, irrigation, water, sewer, road. We even have one down in my area, a sand removal special district, to take the sand off of the residential area that built too close to the ocean. Vector analysis, mosquito control. Also, I think there are about 35 different kinds of special districts, and of course they range in all different sizes, all the way from little three-person boards, in some cases small road district, to larger seven-person district boards. Anyway, my point is, I've seen a lot in working with that many district boards, and then added to that my own experience working as a commissioner with the Seal Rock Water District for about the last 8 years. I've had real time exposure to the functions of a board and so on. So I really enjoy this kind of work, mixing it up with special district boards. But I also think that gives me a good reason or justifies me in saying what I've experienced with you. Your request for team building and communication is not uncommon. A lot of boards struggle from time to time with just exactly these things. So in response to that, I conducted individual interviews with all of you, gained some really good, you had some really good insight to offer, I commend you as a board and as individuals for the care that you seem to have about what goes on around the table as far as your board goes. And also, that care extends to the fact that you were willing to go out and look for some help when you thought that it wasn't working as well as you would like it to work. So that sets you apart from some of the districts that I've seen that have a need for help but are afraid to ask or are not willing to ask for whatever reason. And I want to also point out that a board having difficulty in this area or any area from time to time, it takes time for a board to congeal. When there are changes in board membership, it takes time for the individual members to kind of get up to speed with what is the purpose, what are the objectives, and more importantly, what is the tone or the culture of this organization that I have volunteered my time for. So all of it takes time to gel, and I think that's a part of what might be going on with you. Periodic refreshers are always helpful. That's why SDAO runs a whole gamut of courses, and you, in fact, you have one coming up in Astoria on board duties and responsibilities, I think, towards the end of August, and that might be a good opportunity for some of you to just get refreshed on basic board duties and responsibilities. So, with all of that as a little intro, today this is about process. Whenever we're talking about things like communication and team building, we're talking about group process versus content, which is what you deal with when you have your regular board meeting. You have the agenda and you have business. That's content. And what we're talking, what we're going to be focusing on today is process. How is it going amongst the board members individually and as a whole? So each of you cited specific things in the interviews that I conducted with you. And on the encouraging side, there seemed to be no disagreement about the fact that you felt like you needed some help. Nobody said, why are we doing this? Why am I talking to you? What is it? We're doing just fine. I didn't hear any of that. Most of you came very well prepared to talk insightfully about areas that you feel need to be improved. And those areas fell into categories or themes. So I stood back from my notes that I took with you from you and looked for some kind of an organizing theme that all of this could... I like to keep things simple. You can go so many directions in all of this stuff, but I was looking for some kind of a general theme. And I think I found it, particularly in one of your board members, had some notes, and the word respect kept coming up in those notes. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought, you know, that really is, if there is a single word, that probably is the word to hold on to as far as an organizing theme for what I can possibly bring to the table today. So, yeah, respect. And the sentiment being communicated to me, as I recall, was a felt need for more respect between board members, more respectful behavior between board members, more respect for the duties and the responsibilities of being a board member, of being a member of a team around this table, more respect for the business of Pacific City JWSA, as well as even more respect for the community that your organization is serving. So it's an all-encompassing theme, as I hear it, under the umbrella of respect. And then in looking around to try to, well, what can I offer? I can't teach respect. I don't have a book that I've written on how to be respectful. I know some principles, but maybe my principles aren't the best. So I started looking around for some kind of offering to bring to the table that would satisfy this inquiry into respect. And I went to SDAO documents and basic stuff, a board member packet that's available online. You may even have a copy of it. And it talked about some principles. It didn't identify them as principles of respect, but that's really what they were. And then I started dug a little deeper, and I looked at one of your board policies that goes back to 2017, I believe it was, which dealt with the same topics. It was all about board member conduct, board conduct. Much of it the same as I was reading out of the SDAO material. Again, the word respect didn't come up, but it all drives in that same direction. So I want to revisit the four principles that I latched onto, the four categories, the four items under the that I think speak to respectful behavior in all of those directions that I mentioned, in those guidelines from SDAO, and I want us to discuss each of those in some depth. I want to get your take on what those guidelines mean to you, how they play out for you, and then I'm going to press pretty hard to see that you understand them as individuals, that you accept them as board members, and that you commit to them. And this is really a recommitment because you already have a policy in place that's essentially the same stuff. But it was written 4 years ago, and so we're revisiting that too in the process. So if that sounds like a reasonable agenda for the day, this is highly participative, and I'm gonna do some probing. I'm gonna press you a little bit if needed. But I'd like to walk away from today knowing that that we have some commitment to this refresher on some basic principles of board member conduct and board as a group conduct. So, and you have the four on your agenda that I gave you. The first one is the one that reads, one of the most significant responsibilities as a board member is to understand that the board is a team and members need to work together as such. I was struck by the language in that said, one of the most significant responsibilities, and I started to ask myself, is that just overstatement or is that really true? And the more I thought about it, I thought, no, that... If a person really considered one of the most responsibilities they have as a board member is to understand that the board is a team and that members need to work together as such, that would carry a person and a board a long way in doing the right things. So I'd like your take on just that simple sentence. One of the most significant things responsibilities of a board member to understand the board is a team. What does that mean to you? How would you explain that to somebody else that wanted your take on what are your responsibilities as a team member, as a board member?
I think it means that we don't act independently on behalf of the authority, that we have to be all participating in any discussion that has to do with the authority unless the board has given that authority to an individual board member.
Okay, certainly.
My mind kind of goes to sort of a sports metaphor when you use the word team. And
sure.
On any sports team, I think each individual member of the team has a responsibility to work out, in this case, prepare for meetings, understand the topics of discussion, and come to the game or the team meeting prepared to contribute to the discussion and a final decision.
Okay.
So I think of We're a team, but we're a collection of five individuals,
yeah.
And we each bear that responsibility.
Yeah.
When I look at these, you know, on your bullet points, the four or whatever they are, arrow points or line points, you know, the first one is really linked to the third and the fourth.
Sure.
I mean, they're all pretty much talking about the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I think one of the big challenges is, you know, if you look at it from sort of the perspective, I'll talk outside of the box for a minute as an analogy. So, you know, we had an issue here with vehicles used to be able to park on the beach. That's no longer an option. In the process of changing that from vehicles being allowed to park on the beach to vehicles not being allowed to park on the beach, people divided themselves into two camps pretty quickly, and a lot of time the discussion between those two camps was really difficult. And so when you've got, you know, in our case, we've got five different camps, so to speak, five different elected officials. You know, this isn't a Microsoft team that it was put together at a company. You know, these are five elected officials.
Right.
We all come from different camps. We all may have different opinions on the right way to go or the best thing to do for
Absolutely.
The authority. So how do we, you know, it's one thing to see on paper that we don't have individual board responsibilities and we need to act as a team. How do you bring five different points of view together and achieve some sort of consensus?
Good question. Yeah, good question. So
and I think that the practical implication of that is what's difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
I tend to agree with Sean when you have five different, I'm going to say personalities, because
yep.
there are basically, what is it, four different personality types? maybe more.
Yeah.
But there's about four different basic personality types, and I think this board probably incorporates two or three of those.
Okay.
And so there's going to be differences of opinion, and that's what we have to work around. Still be respectful of each other's opinion, but at the same token, work together.
Okay. So it's a given that we bring individual differences to the table. There's no question about it. The challenge then is to respect those individual differences, hear them out. Maybe we're trying to make a decision on something. And then whether or not my input figures into the final decision, I, as an individual board member, have to go along with the board's decision. Is that something you all agree to? I may not see it that way, and my heart may not be in it, but I am a member of a board that whatever your decision-making process, whether it's by consensus or majority vote, and there's a difference, but whatever the board decides to do, I am now a part of that decision. And my role from that point on is what then?
Support the decision.
Okay. Go ahead, Sean.
That's the easy answer. I mean, you know, we're all, I think once a decision has been made, it's important to support that decision. But, you know, there may be opportunities in the future where, you know, that needs to be reexamined. And, you know, I think that's fair. That's absolutely important to support a decision once it's been made. But, you know, you can imagine a scenario where a decision is a 3-2 decision and somewhere down the line it comes up again and maybe circumstances have changed, maybe things have changed. So, you know, I think we have to be sensitive to the fact that
that's a good point.
Things are always evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to be willing to re-examine any decision that we make
and
modify it.
But for the immediate, the decision that was made, the course of action that was decided on, even if I disagreed with it, my role then is to support it.
Yes.
Or at least not subvert it somehow, whether consciously or unconsciously. And we all have our little ways of being subversive, don't we? Well, maybe you don't, but I do. So an example comes to mind, a flagrant example that I ran into early on in doing the board practices assessments was a water district outside of Portland was considering merging with a wastewater district, and a very volatile public issue, and the majority of the board members on the water district were in favor of the merger. One strong dissenter among the five-member board, so strong that even after the decision was made, he took his case public and had an editorial published in the local paper about what a rotten decision it was, how stupid these people were, and it ought to be reversed and so on. I mean, that's a clear case of subversion. So that's an example of what we obviously want to avoid. But yeah.
Well, there's you know, some of us have served on another board together, which is called the Citizens Advisory Committee. And in that particular organization, there is a process where there could be a I don't remember what we called it, a minority report sort of thing. If there was a decision, then the minority had the opportunity to basically sort of write a minority report as to why they thought that the decision didn't fly.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a balancing act.
That's
there,
fair.
You know,
yeah.
Right? I mean, yes, once the board makes a decision, that decision ought to stick, but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't preclude the people that were in the minority from, you know, continuing to advocate for their case.
They aren't outcasts from that point on. In fact, that may be a very good thing to be public with. You know, that we didn't all agree. The board made a decision by majority, by consensus, but we didn't all agree for these reasons. Your public may consider that a sign of transparency. You know, the public has a right to know that. So, yeah, there's...
I see a difference, though, in that organization than this one, because this is a municipality, and we have state meeting laws and state laws on what our range of authority is. In that case, one of the specific minority reports were done when the organization, which is wide-flung volunteer participation, no elected, well, elected executive committee, but no elected membership, whereas this is elected membership to the board. And the minority reports were used as a tool in the land use process, because the organization would come up with a non-binding, non-legal statement of support or not support for an exception to a land use law. And oftentimes there were people who felt strongly on both sides of the fence. So the organization took a position, communicated that to the Office of Community Development and further to the Planning Commission if it was appropriate. And but the organization created this minority report so that those who had different feelings about the application of that particular land use law, they just had different feelings about it.
Yeah, so it was appropriate in your view.
It wasn't a legally elected board with municipal responsibility.
Yeah.
It was kind of a quasi-judicial, I can't remember the term they used for it, but it was sanctioned by Tillamook County, but not part of Tillamook County.
All right, so I'm hearing general agreement with this very simple statement about one of the most significant responsibilities is to understand the board as a team and to work together. Let me just ask you about another dimension of this. The motive you mentioned, Tom, you mentioned the individual differences that people bring, and the motivation for joining a board is part of those individual differences. We all have our motivations for why we are willing to volunteer our time to serve on a board. Hopefully, the biggest motivation is some desire to communicate or to serve the community, to contribute to the committee.
That was the reason I ran for this office.
Okay.
Rob,
Mike, can I interrupt just for a second? Because we didn't hear from Cameron on that first question. I'm wondering if Cameron has any comments to make.
That went along
thank you.
With Sean, and Tom, I agree. Everybody's doing this for the better of the community. So.
Okay. Fair to say that even though our main objective is to serve and to contribute, that we also bring some personal stuff to the board. Maybe it's something that's I want to feel connected, so I joined the board. I want to feel connected to the business community or something that's going on. Or I have some expertise that I think would be valuable, and I want to make sure that the board hears that. Now, when you have those kinds of motivations, what happens to those motivations in the context of making sure that we understand the most significant responsibility is to understand that the board is a team and members need to work together? What happens to those motivations?
I'm not sure
the question is a very good one. I guess the point I'm trying to make is sometimes we have to set aside those motivations that we bring to the table. My need, for instance, to be seen as an expert on something. Even though that may be true, I may need to set that aside often or maybe all the time as a board member. That's not why I joined the board, because my expertise is in the area of water resourcing, let's say, which it isn't. But that's we hire that work to be done. That's not the work of a board member. So I need to set that need aside. That's the point that I'm making, and thank you. It wasn't a very good question. I'll try to do better.
No, it was a good question. I just didn't quite
it wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fault. All right, so to your point, Sean, none of these is a standalone bullet item here. They're all interwoven. They're all connected. So let's talk about the second one, which is overall, the role of a board member is to make and approve district policies, set the direction of the district, make decisions, establish strategic goals and objectives, and be an advocate for special districts. What's your take on this? John, feel free to chime in.
I can't. I'm a little new at this, and this is a board member thing, so I didn't know what my place was.
No, you have my permission.
Well, thank you. Well, I think, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, we're a group of different people that have gotten together for a common goal, right? And that common goal is to do the best we can to promote the authority, to make sure the authority is managed and run well, and to represent, in your guys' case, your constituents. With me, I'd be representing my customers, right? And so I think it's, and I do agree with Sean that, you know, these are all interrelated. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really struck me the most about one of the things that you said is that, you know, a decision, you know, it's this is kind of a little democracy here, right? I mean, it's, you know, a vote may go 3-2, but it's important that we demonstrate cohesion and, you know, be a team and to, you know, and not just for ourselves, but to reflect that to, you know, the people that we serve, right? And, to not necessarily give up on an issue that you feel strongly about, but, you know, it didn't necessarily go your way, but to support the decision, it was made in a democratic way. Doesn't mean give up on it, but it does mean that, you have to come together as a team and stand behind those decisions and to be able to defend them or to justify them to the people we have to answer to.
Sure. Okay, so, the statement is the role of a board member is basically about policy making versus mm-hmm. you are managing the operation. That those are, in some respects, two different worlds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have to work together. Those are two different worlds. And those two different worlds get very easily confused from a board member perspective. So I'm going to come back to you, John. How do you know when you're dealing with a board that is adhering to its role of being a policy-making board versus starting to tread into the area of operational management?
Or even special interests, for that matter.
Okay.
You know, that's a skill that I'm going to have to learn, to be honest. As you know, as I say, this is I've worked with city councils before. This is the first time I've worked with an elected board, and you know, my role versus their role and how those interact and work together is something I'm still trying to feel my way through.
Okay.
But I think. You know, I think basically what is my role to do is to bring the issues to the board and to have them, to make them aware of them, and then when decisions need to be made, then, you know, I kind of bring a lot of the issues that are the topics of conversations. Mm-hmm. Is that not correct?
Correct.
And so I think that's, you know, one distinction about our roles is...
Absolutely.
You know, you know, trying to maintain that distinction without crossing over is going to be one of my biggest challenges, I think.
Okay.
Let me ask the flip side of that question. Why wouldn't you want board members to participate in operations?
Okay, good question. What's the answer?
Well, I certainly don't feel like I have the experience and technical expertise of an operations person.
I have an answer for that. Mm-hmm. Why would you want five different leaders directing eight different employees at the same time? If you set the policy and it's up to you to have a manager, that manager should be the person that those employees look to and work for. If you stopped an employee out in the street and asked them to do something, they would jump and probably do it. But they shouldn't, because they work for John. They work for the manager. You don't have the expertise. You don't have the background. You don't know a water line from a sewer line. I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm sure you do.
Technically not true.
Technically not true. But
one smells a little different.
One bell from another. Let's put it that way. So it muddies the waters. They don't know who to respect, who to go to. It would be a cluster, in my opinion.
Yeah. And this is kind of a team thing too, because you know, the dynamic, you know, what you five represent, and the dynamic of what I represent. You know, we have to make that mesh. And you know, I think obviously the day-to-day direction. And, you know, just kind of internal policies in terms of, you know, how we operate something or you know, what test procedures we use and that type of thing. You know, there are reasons that people have certifications in this field. And
there's a reason they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Right? You know, so, and really from a legal sense, it has to be. And so I think you know, we have to maintain that autonomy, but still be able to come together and work as a team in our different roles to just for the sake of progress. So
are there liabilities involved if board members are participating in operations?
There are liabilities involved?
Absolutely.
That's interesting. That's a good point. That's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. So, a little wrinkle on the issue you brought up. What if there is bona fide expertise on the board, let's say in one member, that operations could really benefit from tapping into?
Those would be private conversations, private meetings, private, you know, it isn't that the board member would go to the employee, but to the manager and share that expertise.
Yes, I would say, and okay.
That
and it wouldn't be shared at a board meeting.
No, not at all.
Once upon a time, we had a board member, long-standing board member, who was a surveyor and has surveyed virtually every inch of Pacific City. He didn't mix into the water sewer operations, but his expertise, I believe, came in handy on occasion when projects were being considered. Watch out for this.
Every month.
Check this out.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were in constant contact.
Private conversations between that board member and the authority manager.
And
that was an expertise that the rest of the board
had. One important caveat to that, that is with the express consent of the other board members, that individual is sharing their expertise. In other words, that person has been delegated implicitly or explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another example of that delegation is that when the board asked for a workshop and the board asked me directly to contact you, then I have that right to contact you, but that doesn't mean the rest of the board gets to get you on the phone and talk to you That's where that boundary line gets drawn.
Good point.
But to comment on that, you know, if we authorized you to reach out and you know, set up this meeting with Rob Mills, then given that if the board directed you to do that, would you be obligated then to share the information with the board in the reverse direction that he shared with you?
Absolutely.
Yes. I'm also, in my point of view, I don't get to hammer my personal opinion as part of that contact.
No.
So whether it's somebody like Ryan Fleming or somebody else, I have to be very careful that I am only involved in that conversation for the purpose of setting up the meeting, not for the purpose of voicing my concerns or getting personal advice, because there is a distinct separation.
That's good.
There.
Yeah, that's all good. Okay.
So it's got to be, once a board member has been delegated by the board to make a decision or to participate in something, I mean, that's got to be a two-way street, right? I mean, because if it's a board decision to delegate, then the board needs to be completely informed coming back the other way.
Apprised of what the result was.
Yeah.
Tom.
Yeah. Well, some of this conversation we're just having concerns me in that this workshop is revolving around communication. And communication between board members, between executive staff, and operational staff is what I perceive our problem is, lack of. In all three cases. I belong to a lot of different organizations, and I think personally, executive decisions, let's put it this way, the man with the shovel, I don't know what the man at the top is doing, and the man at the top needs to know what the man with the shovel is doing. In some organizations where you have middle management or a cutoff, this is where I think our problem came, is that lack of communication from one of the three legs of this stool was cut off. And there's got to be a way to able to communicate both from the board, from the executive, and the staff, not in an operational way. But a line of communication needs to be there. That's where we ran into a problem.
All right. So what should that line of communication be, John?
Well, in this case, I believe John, our employee, kind of gave us the idea. Wasn't that correct?
Mm-hmm.
To have, because we don't have a human resource generalist or a specialist in this organization, and, you know, trying to get legal and or HR advice from consultants, sometimes not timely. So what the staff came up with was to have quarterly interviews by a HR specialist to inquire from staff if they have any concerns about the organization, their work status, their opportunities for advancement, anything like that. That's from an HR point of view. Make it anonymous so that the HR consultant can come back to us as a board. So that's kind of keeps the legalities of, in check so that we don't act on or try to make operational decisions. But at the same token, we as a board understand that there may be a problem, there may not.
Why wouldn't you look to your operations manager for that?
That was the problem.
Okay. So
see, that was the middle.
And granted, that will happen. All right, go ahead.
So we did hire an HR specialist outside. We did have full-on one-hour meetings. You did get a summary. The individual reports are in their personnel file. I spoke to her again this week. At the next board meeting, you'll have the employee handbook, which is a separate issue. But and I talked to her about this 15-minute quarterly meeting, which she's happy to do. But because it's only been a month since we've done the one that the first 1 hour, month and a half, her suggestion was to wait till John's been here for a month and to see how they feel about the transition, because right now they're just going to respond to what I've done in the last month and a half, and that's you're probably going to hear the same thing. I don't know, because things are so calm right now. But she suggested that we wait until John has been here a month so that they can assess to her how the transition between the two of us and John is working with the staff. Because I'll be leaving.
Well, my point is not so much this particular situation, but for the future. When we got in trouble, the employees had, from what I heard, the opinion that they were stuck. They didn't have anybody to go to.
We understand that.
So the line of communication needs to exist. If nothing more subtle than, say, every 6 months or something. But that line of communication needs to exist so that staff knows that they have a way to get my ear or Carolyn's ear. Or
they also know they can call you.
They didn't think they could.
Okay. But let's take it back just a step. You have John, who's your operations manager. If you're curious as a board, you have reason to wonder about what the climate is like, which I think is what you're talking about out
yes.
there. How's the mood in the workforce? Your first check should be with John. John,
yeah.
How's it yeah. going out there? What's your sense?
Yeah.
Now, if over time I start to doubt the information I'm getting from John about that, then that would be a time when you might try an alternative like this. But my first recourse has got to be John. To not make that my first recourse is subverting John's
yes,
role
authority.
As a manager.
Yes.
Oh, I agree with that. It's just, all I'm saying is that line of communication needs to exist.
I think we're in violent agreement on that, Tom.
And Tom, maybe, you know, in a big organization, if an employee has a problem with their immediate supervisor, they can take it to the next level supervisor, give HR a call. And I think maybe if I may, what you're trying to say is that there is no path beyond me in a case like that, unless it's the board, right?
Right.
And is that pathway that you're trying to establish or would like to see established?
It wasn't established then.
That was the problem.
It
was inferred that you could call a board member, but no one felt comfortable doing that, evidently.
I did.
Well, I
don't think you can say no one.
I think one of the things, maybe to piggyback on what Tom's saying, is, you know, and this is why I set myself with the question earlier, I set myself up, you know, why wouldn't you want to have board members participating in operations? right? And clearly you don't want to have that. And that sort of implies a hard wall, right? And sort of implies this wall where board members shouldn't be, you know, interacting with staff. And I think we just need to make sure that that wall isn't a complete hard wall. There's some gates. There's some gates in there.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think we need to make sure that from the board perspective, we're sending the message that our first line of interaction and our main line of interaction with staff is through John.
Absolutely.
And staff's interaction with the board should be through John. Yes. But I think we need to communicate that that's not a complete hard wall. I think we need to make sure to be really good about communicating that we're not cutting each other off. You know, this isn't the, you know, Great Wall of China, although that was pretty porous in retrospect. But, you know, what we're saying is, hey, this has got to be the first line of communication.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, then we also need to be able to communicate that, you know, we want to hear from our staff and vice versa, you know.
We want to hear from our staff, and my first response to the staff member has been in the past, I mean, I've been on the board for 14 years, as have you talked to the authority manager?
Exactly.
What was the outcome of that, to get a sense of it before I go
exactly.
looking for exactly. data exactly. or think that I know what the problem is and I exactly. want to hear more about it?
Exactly.
Because I have to respect the authority manager's position and make sure that, as Sean said, that protocol has been followed.
Exactly.
And then when I get the information, the first thing I'm going to do is sit down and talk to John.
Good.
I'm not going to bring it up in a board meeting. I'm not going to share it with other board members. We've got to follow the protocol.
And that's good. And I think it's good that you bring that up. And I think that that's important that that is true for all of us.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that you know, that there's got to be an avenue for us as individual board members to come and talk to John, you know, that, and that's got to work both ways too.
So is everybody understanding the caveats that we're discussing here, and are you agreeing with them, and can you commit to them?
I can.
Cameron?
Mm-hmm. It was a problem then, but now we have a new manager, and it's going to be resolved.
I think it's important, to Tom's point, that we have a avenue. I mean, I'm pretty confident it's going to be resolved too, but we want to make sure, right? I mean, we've been down this path once, so let's make sure that the policy's in place in case we ever go down this path again, and hopefully we don't.
Tom, how about you?
I kind of agree with that, but it's not necessarily like a quarterly or a biannual meeting with an HR person, not just with the board, but that an employee could bring up anything. If he feels he can't or she can't communicate or doesn't have a decent rapport with their immediate supervisor or their executive, that they have an avenue to air their concerns.
And I think you're hearing the board members saying, yeah, that's an understandable situation.
Well, that's a good question. Does staff have the ability to contact the HR person outside of those quarterly meetings?
Yes, they can. They just ask for the phone number. They know I've talked to them, and they can call her anytime.
So you have an HR person on standby, in
yeah.
effect?
Yeah.
Is that?
That's what we did.
So the board has agreed to that. That's it. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
So that's your safety valve, so to speak.
Yeah.
Your safety valve.
Mm-hmm.
So, but...
Well, and it's not unusual for these small districts, these special districts, to not have an HR department, right? So, you know,
right.
I imagine that a similar arrangement is probably common among these types of things.
Yeah. Well, at first when Tom brought it up, it wasn't a warm welcome of having a consultant and stuff. But then as we found out there were more incidents or problems, I don't know, then it became prevalent that we need to do something of the outside of the box, because not everybody feels comfortable going to you or depending on, like you had said, on the rapport. So I think now with the HR person, I think it's going to help, long as they know that they can, the employees. I didn't know that Michelle had gotten back to the employees to, for the employees to talk to her. That's the first I heard of that.
And I like the idea.
It was in a board meeting, and I handed out summaries.
Yeah.
Mm, okay, so it's in writing, huh?
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. So her report was one thing. I didn't realize that the employees had that phone number to call anytime they wanted to, and I think that's a great idea.
Okay, good.
I didn't know that either.
Right.
I think it's important to look at the evolution of this concept, because what we did with, I can't remember her name, the HR consultant.
Nanette.
What we did with Nanette grew out of work that we'd been doing for a couple of years with a previous HR consultant that worked with the board. Mm-hmm. And I think our needs in that process became apparent that we had more specific needs. And so things went along. But the contact and the work that Nanette did, that Michelle set up, grew out of that kind of history of discussion.
There was a context to it, a continuity.
Yeah, and I think it was a great move, and Michelle found just the right person, and it worked really well. But I do think that we have to appreciate the history of how we got there.
Okay, I'm hearing across the board understanding, I'm hearing agreement, I'm hearing commitment to the second of these principles that we've been focusing on. And thanks for your perspective on this. That really helps. So let's move on. District Boardman, I'm on the third one.
Go out to my truck, I'll be right back.
District board members have no individual powers separate from the powers of the board and have no authority to act individually. What?
Anne is asking if we need to reset so we have a full board again.
Oh.
I don't think we need to.
That's up to you.
I thought we might want to consider having everybody at the table when we have these discussions. They're very important.
It's up to you.
I'm not promoting the idea, I'm just asking.
We'll assume it'll be just a minute.
Yeah, let's get with you.
You've never worked with a board like this then before?
No, not quite this dynamic, no.
Dynamic. You want to elaborate, John?
Well, no, what I mean dynamic. I mean, this structure, I haven't worked with a small special district.
So who did you report to then in your previous job? What position did you report to?
Well, at the city of Astoria, I reported to the public works director who reported to the city manager, who had to work with the city council.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so you were two steps removed then.
In the city of Astoria, okay. I was. Although I gave presentations to the council in small town, they knew me, I knew them. In Seattle, I worked for a large corporation, like 120,000 employees.
And reported to whom?
A regional manager who probably had 10 people above him.
In the engineering firm.
Yeah, in the engineering firm. And, of course, there's, stakeholders of a variety of
kinds. Isn't it, Russ, maybe too early to tell, but isn't it nice to get rid of some of those layers?
Oh, it's very nice to get rid of some of those layers, yes. It is. It's too many layers is not productive and does not promote progress at all, from my experience. Yeah.
Okay, so,
all right, please, go ahead, Rob.
All right. District board members have no individual powers separate from the powers of the board and have no authority to act individually without delegation of authority from the board. If a board member acts without authority from the board, the individual can be exposed to personal as well as district liability. Your take on this as a board, what do you make of this?
that's why I asked the question earlier. You know, does the district face liability? And that's, you know, I think that ought to be a concern. You know, I mean, if board members are acting individually and it's putting the district at risk of liability, that's a problem.
So what would be an example that would cause a liability?
Let's say I went and started talking to a staff member about some other staff member and started getting into confidential employee information.
Okay.
Signing a contract.
Oh, going out.
With a vendor. Talking out, to vendors.
Yeah, going out and contracting on your...
Redirecting vendors or...
So I think the challenge sometimes is under what acts mean. You know, because sometimes you think that act means that you're taking action or you're telling them what to do. But in my understanding of this, it's any conversation that has to do with anything about PCJWSA with a vendor or a consultant is off limits to me as a board member outside of the board meeting.
Good read of
unless you're specifically delegated
to do so.
Unless, and that's the big...
By the board as a whole.
And by the board as a whole.
Okay.
Part of the problem with that is, unfortunately, human nature in a very small town where everybody knows everybody, you see everybody at the grocery store, at church, at, you know...
Before we stop.
Yeah. So coffee in the morning, you know, so these topics will come up. You just got to shut up. It's hard. It's a
so
very
what's an example of, that you've run into, Tom, with that?
Well, just running into somebody at the store, for example. And it just happened to me a couple of times.
And the topic comes up of what?
I'm having sewer problems, or I'm having a problem. I'm a board member. They're coming to me.
Yeah.
Or we have asbestos pipe. Why aren't we doing something about that? God dang it.
Okay.
So, and I said, well, talk to, you know, I've always addressed it as, well, we need to talk to the authority manager. And he said, well, you're the board member. That's the argument you get. This is a small town. Everybody knows everybody.
And your response should be, I'm a board member, and my job is to make policy. Talk to our authority manager, because he's the operations guy.
I tell him to come to a board meeting.
Well, that either that, or the comeback is, well, you should know about that.
Well, Tom, I can't help you defend yourself on that.
I think it brings up a good point, though, and that is that I think there was a, in my mind, there's a pretty clear distinction to what Carolyn said, and what she was, and maybe she wasn't being as expansive as she meant to. And I'm putting words in her mouth, but you know, I think there's a difference between interacting with a vendor and interacting with a member of the public. You know, if we're talking about interacting with something that has you know, serious potential, if we're talking about a contractor or a consultant or a vendor that might have business at hand with the district, that's one thing. But, I mean, I'm an elected official. I'm accountable to the people. I'm not going to not talk to the people of this community. So
but it's not
understanding that line.
You're not conducting business with the general public.
Right.
Whereas with a vendor, the presumption, at least, if not the fact, is you're conducting business.
You bet. And so, like, in Tom's case, you know, if somebody were to, you know, I have had complaints about asbestos pipe, but I don't think that that's out of line for us to have a conversation with the authority manager about asbestos pipe because it's been a concern of the citizens.
Sure.
I don't think that's out of line.
Mm-hmm.
Having a discussion with a concrete pipe contractor who is potentially wanting to have business to replace those pipes, that's off limits.
Exactly.
That line isn't always so crystal clear, but I think it's important we understand the distinction because we have an obligation as elected officials to interact with our
community. To be responsive to the public, sure. Yeah, good point. Yeah, absolutely agree. But the conversation with a business contact out there, the presumption can be quickly made that it's about business, whereas the presumption with the public, if you're just, oh yeah, asbestos, terrible problem, yeah, we talk about that at the water district. You know, I'm no expert on it, but talk to our authority manager and he'll tell you all the challenges we have and so on. You want his number? I even have our general manager call somebody when I get a question like that, if he's, you know, if it's reasonable. Okay.
Well, I just quickly add, when I've had those situations, post office or wherever, and in those kind of conversations, the first step is to absolutely recommend that the person call the authority manager and have a discussion about the operational side of that and the technical side of it. The other thing that I've done is called the authority manager myself and said, I just had this conversation. Here was the general nature of it. You may expect a call from this person, and if you don't hear, because of the type of or level of concern, if you don't hear from them in a few days, you might want to reach out to them yourself.
Okay. Good.
And so I think what we want to try to do as board members is promote and support and encourage that kind of communication between the authority manager and, the customer who has a question that we couldn't pretend to answer.
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
There have been meetings where we discuss these things. There are references to asbestos pipe in particular in the master plan. You know, there are plans to do things about this. But again, I don't feel qualified to address the specifics of that, but I do feel a responsibility to make sure that it doesn't
to be
address.
Responsive.
Yeah.
I think how do you feel about the
I would say
these kinds of questions and issues?
Oh yeah, no, well I think that's part of my job. But I would say that, you know, certainly if a concerned citizen, you know, somebody you represent calls you and tips you off to an issue or a problem that, you know, maybe I know about, maybe I don't know about, there's nothing wrong with, you know, you calling me and alerting me.
Yeah, we don't know whether you know about it or not.
You know, but that there's also nothing wrong with you suggesting to the person that they give me a call.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have been elected. You're going to get questions. You're going to have people confront you about things. And, if there's something I need to know about, let me know. But, yeah, feel free to give them my number and tell them to call me because I think that's what I'm here for. So,
Tom, go ahead.
Along with that, I think it's board member's responsibility to understand what we're doing. It's a simplistic way to say it. If someone asks me a specific question about an operational thing, bring it to the manager, but do your own research to find out exactly what they're talking about. If it's a technical nature, sometimes, now I'm a techie, so I kind of understand some of the stuff easier because I'm used to it, but not necessarily everybody else. So you need to have, as a board member, you need to take the responsibility of being knowledgeable about an issue. Maybe it's a conversation with John. Maybe it's using the internet. But so you don't just ask questions willy-nilly, but you're trying to find out basic information. So we need to be knowledgeable as we can about operations, about our engineering, and about the system.
But we don't call the engineers to get that information, and we don't call other people in town that might be resources on behalf of ourselves as part of the board to get that information. In other words, I can't stop a vendor and say, okay, explain this to me, you know, in terms of what's going on, or a contractor. As a board member, I can't do that independently. That's not my position.
Why not?
Because of acting individually. I have to act as a group. I can't go out in this community and say, stop the Coastway Construction, say, we got this project going on, I don't quite understand it, so can you give me some more information? Or we're looking at doing this project, and I want to know more about it from you. I can't act independently on my own as a member of this board.
That's where you go to John.
I have to go to John, or it has to be on the agenda so we can discuss it.
Right.
Well, and I can say that one of my primary jobs is to keep you folks informed.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything going on that I think you need to know about, or anything going on that you may get a question about, it's, you know, I think it's one of my primary jobs to be sure that I keep you informed about those types of things as well.
And we have those opportunities in board meetings where the manager tells us, you know, we're launching into this project for the next 2 or 3 months. You're going to be seeing a water line get replaced on XYZ Street. And so we have those opportunities to know what's happening. But I don't want to inject myself into the operations by talking to the contractor directly, because I don't have that responsibility or expertise.
That makes total sense. The other avenue of communication in this context is to let the public know what we're doing. Now, we have a new website. Well, new, it's what, a year or so old? And when we do projects, I think they should be in there. I thought we were going to have weekly projects, or where a crew was going to be, things like that.
No, that was never discussed.
I thought we did discuss it.
No, we only had the major projects that have been done. In fact, you know, some of those are so old they could come off the web now.
Yeah.
I don't think there would be another project on there until, master plans when they come out, but Rupel will be on the website.
What I'm thinking of is there going to be, like, well, Rupel's a good example.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's going to be some disruption of
traffic.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
So that needs to be...
That will be, you bet, it'll be publicized.
So people,
or maybe we're doing hydrant flushing and they...
Yeah, and we do that. We put a ticker on there.
We put a notice on there, too. Yeah, we're lines on this.
Yeah. And we also put it on their bill. So there's those communications. But we haven't had a project since wastewater treatment plant. So nothing to put out there. And no, I wasn't aware of weekly projects, small ones being put out there, just major.
Tom, I want to come back to a couple of things with you. One is the distinction that Carolyn drew on the discussion we were having about going out and talking to a vendor to gain expertise. Do you accept her clarification?
Yes, I do, although I don't like it.
It
limits my ability to research or get information. It limits. I understand the necessity.
Okay.
Period. I understand the necessity, but I don't like to limit myself from access to data.
I have a comment about that. So, if we're going to do a project, and you were to call the engineers, Parametrics in Portland, and ask them about the project, you know, we're going to get invoiced for every single time you call them. So, and you're questioning them as to how it's done and how it's processed, which the manager should be doing anyway and explain to you. So every time we disrupt one of our vendors, it's costing time and money. So the research could be just a meeting with him for an hour, and if he doesn't have the answer, he'll get it. More meetings with John, the better off of you are going to be.
I get that, but John just started, and we've had things have just been bottlenecked right now.
Well,
and
nobody called me for a meeting on anything.
Moving forward, we're talking about moving forward, not the past.
Right,
but. How did we get there? I mean, we got here
John's
from some...
Trust him.
No, I mean, but we got there somehow, and that's where the issues came up, and we're trying to resolve it. I get it. I mean, I'm like Tom. I like kind of figure out, okay, not like I'm going to stop somebody digging in the ditch and what they're doing and things like that. I like to know kind of how things are done.
Then find out from John.
Right. That's what I plan on doing.
Another point of clarification with you, Tom. I made light of the member of the public asking you what's going on over there, and you felt like you had to explain it to I'd like you to feel confident about your role as a board member that you could say with a straight face to that person, my job is a policymaker on the board. I'm not in charge of operations. I'd like you to feel comfortable with that. And that has to do with accepting what we talked about, most significant responsibilities of board members to understand their role. You are policymaking, not operations. Does that help or tick you off?
Well, neither. I feel as an elected official that I have to respond to constituents' concern and would direct them to John or say, well, let me find out and I'll get back to you, which would be to John to get the information, because that's a personal thing, request from a constituent to me as a board member, not to the board, but to me. And I should be able to respond.
How do board members feel?
That is very clear in our policies that John is the public relations person that talks to people. It is not the board member that gets back to somebody. You could invite the public member to meet with you and John, and that could be a three-way. But it's not up to us to go get information from John and then disperse it to the public, because we may, as individual board members, may or may not have that skill.
Well, I think it's too, there's a distinction I make between being responsive and responding myself. Well, I think being responsive is the role, is important for a board member, to see that I inform myself and that customer is informed. But that doesn't mean that I'm doing the informing. It means that I'm going to help John be in contact with the customer.
I'm thinking more of like, let's look at state or federal government elected officials. And you call or write a government official, let's just say it's a U.S. congressman, and I'm having this problem with the IRS, or I'm having this problem with Veterans Affairs or something, and can you help me? And so then the congressman would contact the Veterans Affairs. In this case, I would contact John. Here's this customer's concern. Would you take care of this for me? So the idea is to make sure that the customer gets feedback almost immediately. So as an elected official, I want to be responsive to my constituents.
That's a really good point. And as you said that, I thought about, well, the commissioners of the IRS have a different role than the congressman in that role. And we're more like a commission in that we respond as a group to the public rather than...
But we're elected as individuals.
Nonpartisan individuals.
That's true.
And we are, by statute, we are told to work as a group, whereas that's a little different, I think, than an individual representative working at a state or federal level in Congress.
I respectfully disagree.
Okay, I would just try to simplify this by saying that I think you feel like this principle is stepping on your toes to some degree in being responsive to the public. Is that a fair statement? You feel constrained by this?
Somewhat.
Okay.
I understand the basic premises here, but I feel that part of my personal philosophy of transparency is to be upfront and honest and as proactive as I can be for an individual constituent who...
Okay, and I think the board is asking you to give up some of your independence and your need to be a resource to the public. I think the board is saying we want you to set that aside. Sort of like we talked about earlier, the personal motivations that people bring to their responsibilities.
Or to reframe it, because...
Reframe it is a good way to put it?
Because the concept is not that I, as a board member, have an individual responsibility to address all those details. But I do have a responsibility as a board member, because we're all elected by the public, to see that there is responsiveness on the part of BCJWSA. And the most responsible way to do that is to promote conversation directly with the authority manager, because we don't have the technical expertise in this field.
I think that there's, you know, a middle ground also. I mean, that would not, in your case, what you're talking about, that would not preclude. So if it happened to me, you know, I went to John, I said, this community member had expressed this concern to me, you know, I think it's an interesting and valid concern. I go and I have a meeting and I talk to John about it. John's aware of it. He's going to go off and do some research to try to get some information. Well, that doesn't preclude me from getting back in touch with the original, at least in my mind, that doesn't preclude me from getting back in touch with the person who made the request, and for me to say, hey, I had that conversation with the manager. He's got more expertise than I do. I'll give you some, you know, general talking points that we talked about, but, you know, he's the guy you got to talk to. And I think you can accomplish both things. I mean, I think being responsive means having John do the technical work, but it doesn't mean you abandon your constituent.
Right, exactly.
You know, you go back to your constituent and you say, hey, by the way, I had that conversation. I had it on such and such a date. These are the things that we talked about. He's going to have better details than I am. He's going to be able to execute it better than I am. And you get to do both.
What's your reaction to what you just heard?
That's valid.
Okay. All right, so let's leave it at that. But there's some clarification that still needs to go on, I think, on this over time. And I'll talk more about what I hope happens over time when we get done. But speaking of time,
yes,
I want to move on to the final one, which is individual board members have no individual authority. We run into that expression again. No individual authority to direct district staff or administrative activities without delegation of that authority from the board. What does that mean?
I think it means what we've been talking about, that, you know, we don't get involved in operations. You know, we're not the employees' supervisors. We're not the staff supervisors.
Okay.
But there's, you can imagine somewhat of a gray zone there, right?
I mean, sure.
There's a necessity that the board chair, in some aspects, has some superficially elevated duties, so to speak, right? And so you can imagine a situation where there could be some gray area there. I mean,
absolutely. So it hinges around the word direct. What does that mean, to direct staff? Does that mean?
I don't have the authority to tell staff people that are working on a project on my street that they need to stop that until I get to the bottom of why we're doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Does a simple statement like, if I as a board member say to a staff member, you know what I think we ought to do around here is...
Year one. That's what I did.
What?
I said I learned that rule in year one. You just don't do that.
Okay,
we whacking around the steps,
You might as well.
You might as well just do this part over here.
So now, I didn't say I'm directing you.
I just said you might consider it. Yeah. By God, they had it.
But how does a staff member take that?
They did it.
Oh, a board member came to me and said, I better do this or I'm out of here. Yeah. So it hinges, to your point, it's a judgment thing, but words matter.
Yes,
words matter. It's a perception of impropriety.
Yes, it's a perception of it, yeah. Well put. So, but there's also a qualification on this too, which is that would be okay if you were delegated the authority to do it by the board.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, in our case, in our little water district, we have a designated treasurer on our board. A guy named Glenn has been at it for, many, many years, highly qualified to do it. He goes in every board meeting before the board meeting. He goes in about an hour early and sits down with the general manager and talks about, I presume, finances. Well, he has, over time, he has implicit authority to come in and talk to the general manager about finances. And to our knowledge, it works out fine. The general manager has never complained, and we never have a problem with finances. So they must be doing something right in that hour. But my point is, he has at least the implicit authority, if not the explicit authority from the board, to have those conversations. That's different than if I were to go into the general manager and say, you know, the last time the crew was up in our area working, they didn't quite remove all of that debris from around the fire hydrant. And I don't know, I'm just one board member here, just our little subdivision, but wouldn't it be nice if, you know, and we're back to directing. Okay. So,
I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, when we had the water meters replaced, you know, the contractor, at least on my street, just left all the old water meters all over the place. So I had a conversation with the authority manager saying, you know,
as you should.
All the old meters were littered down the side of the road. So that's, so I think that's an appropriate conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not directing.
But yeah, does that mean we don't talk about operational things? But it's key that we talk to the authority manager about.
But it's also, I've come into authority managers prior and I said, I'm here as a citizen, not as a board member.
Oh, okay.
The weed whacking that got done or the flushing that was done on my street, I'm very disappointed in, and here's why.
Okay.
So I feel like if it's in my neighborhood on my street and I'm a customer, I need to put a different hat on and be very clear that I'm coming in as a customer.
Okay, I hadn't thought of it that way. It would be nice, if I were on your board, it would be nice for you to tell me that you did that, just so I know. Later.
Yeah, we've talked about wearing different hats.
Yeah,
I don't know how long it's
okay,
been.
Okay, so that's been part of the conversation.
But I don't know if it's been recent for everyone
okay.
here.
Yeah. So this is making sense then to you, this no direct authority, no individual authority to direct staff and administrative activities?
And I hesitate in some ways to bring this up, but I think this has got to cover past employees too.
You what?
I think this has to cover past employees, that board members do not contact past employees about current board business.
Okay.
Or other employees.
That you just it's just not appropriate.
Okay. How do people feel about that?
What's the distinction between other employees and past employees? You mean current employees?
Uh-huh. Current employees.
Tom?
They're no longer employee. They're a private citizen. What's the
issue?
It's
if you say an employee was let go or dismissed for a particular reason.
That's different.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
Or if an employee quit because he was upset.
That's personal. That's personal privileged information. I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
that's
any
what we're
reason
about.
That an employee left. That's not a discussion between me and that poor employee that's no longer. I can't talk PCJWSA business or employment with that person.
And we don't always have the innermost details of the departure of an employee.
Okay.
And we shouldn't necessarily.
That makes perfect sense. It's a personnel, private, privileged information that I don't need to know.
Cameron, where are you on this?
Well, I've got a shooting migraine, and so... Just not, no, anyway.
Well, is the conversation making sense to you?
Yeah, it is. It's lights and, yeah. But, I walked, I took care of Kurt's dogs. I'm friends with Kurt and his wife, so.
But you don't have discussions about our business.
No. No.
That's the line. It's not who you can talk to, it's what you talk about.
Right.
But it's a small town. I mean, we're all friends with a lot of the people.
But it's up to us to draw that line and keep those lines of communication appropriate.
Hello.
Are you buying it?
It's a small town. Everybody knows everybody.
It's difficult.
Yeah, right. I mean, it...
Yeah, I can imagine.
To me, I think the important thing is to not have conversations with prior employees that you wouldn't have with any other member of the public. I mean, I think it's hard. I think it's the wrong thing to do to just wall off somebody just because they used to work here.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
But it's important to make sure that those conversations are within the realm of the conversations you would have with any other constituent. Mm-hmm.
Carolyn, do you want to add anything for clarification here?
I think his definition correct. I didn't mean to speak for you.
No. It's a small community and you talk to people, but there's a limit on what you can say. And you don't put yourself in that position to be at risk of doing so. I mean, to me, that's part of the commitment of being on this board is, we've always tried not to all show up to the same event at the same time or get there and then gather together.
Yeah.
It's just part of what we do that I think has helped this organization or supported this organization in what it needs to do.
So are you, out of this conversation, how is this conversation impacting your feeling of trust between you, which was one of the issues that...
This brings me back to my personal philosophy, principle of transparency. Now, as I was just running this around, I'm backtracking just a tad before we get to trust. Just popped into my mind. I like the idea as far as being responsive to a constituent, the idea of sitting down with the constituent and the authority manager. I think it accomplishes what I would consider transparency to the public. And it doesn't address this trust thing, but for me, transparency is an important principle with constituents. So we can move on.
So what about the trust issue?
The trust, when the perception is that data isn't being shared, has a tendency in my mind to show a lack of trust.
It's awfully dark. We were trying to sell cameras and see if we can adjust the light.
It helps me, but that's, don't worry about it.
Sean, can you open that?
Yeah.
Maybe that would be enough to add some light.
Oh, thank you.
These are terrible lights.
Appropriate for an office, but not for a migraine.
Oh, yeah.
Keep going.
Sorry. Like I say, the perception of a lack of communication, or somebody knows something and somebody else doesn't, indicates a lack of trust. That why didn't I know that? I should have known that, whatever the issue is.
Okay.
And that indicates a lack of trust in me, mm-hmm. And that ticks me off.
You mean when others perceive that you have withheld information?
What? Both ways.
Okay.
Both ways. when I feel that I have either been misled or not informed, that means that wherever that information lies, I was not trusted with that information.
Right. Okay. So do you see how what we've talked about in these four principles helps to keep those lines of communication open on valid, relevant information?
Kind of, sort of.
What would help, Tom? What would help?
I don't know. I think it comes down to personalities once again, too. But I don't know. I mean, I just want to be informed of what's going on.
Do you hear anybody saying that they don't want to have you informed?
Well, I don't hear anybody saying that, but it sometimes happens. And quite honestly, I've made that same mistake. I mean, it wasn't sometimes it's not purposely done. It's inadvertent.
Yeah, true.
So I understand that.
True.
But not being informed. I'm a data guy, you know.
From my perspective, can you give me an example just so I understand in terms of what you mean by an example of the trust and the communication thing? I mean, not to bring up any dirty laundry, I'm just trying to get an idea of where you're coming from on that.
I think I was pretty specific. It's any issue.
Any issue.
Any issue that I'm not informed on, that it should be a board member's, it's my responsibility as well as my right to know what's going on.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think that other board members know more than you do?
I'm sure they do.
How is that?
They're smarter than me.
No. No, I mean, we all get the same agendas. We all get the same manager reports. We all go to the same board meetings. I'm trying to figure out where you're coming from with that, because in the past, at least my little 4 or 5 months here, have not distributed or talked to anybody any more than anybody else or given out any information. And I know that Tony in the past, I don't know about Kirk because I was involved in that, but Tony in the past gave out the same information to the same people. So I'm confused.
Well, I don't think you can say, except for Kurt, because I wasn't a part of that. I mean,
okay.
He was one of the problems.
I worked from home.
I know.
For 10 months. So I was not here on a daily basis to know what information was put out there, because I didn't get it.
And that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that I think that there were instances when he was the authority manager,
yes,
that some board members had more information than other board
members. And I believe you.
And that didn't get shared with other board members. So there were decisions that were made with some board members not having the complete picture.
I get that.
Now
and
I understand.
Understand
a little bit better.
Yeah, and that's where...
Let me add to that, that with this particular person, there were different stories told to different people, and it was very late in the game that I discovered that.
And I'm glad you clarified that, because that helps me too.
Yeah.
Because every time somebody says, well, they didn't get the same information.
Yeah. Yeah, that helps, because I was just, you know,
I don't want to just, you know, pick on any one person, but, you know, that I think is where trust comes into play.
Yeah.
Right. And not
absolutely
just with the authority manager, but amongst board members.
Right.
And if there are board members who don't trust other board members, you can imagine scenarios where information is shared with some board members and not other board members.
Yes.
And so when it comes time to make decisions, sometimes decisions are being made with some members having more information than other members.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it's really important, if we're going to make these commitments, and I advocate that we do, you know, going back to these four bullet points that we talked about, you know, there's sort of a flip side to what you're talking about here. And we don't have any individual powers that are separate from the board, right? And the flip side of that in my mind is the board also, every member of the board, because we're elected, ought to have the same information.
Absolutely.
And when there are trust issues, that doesn't happen.
Right, great.
I can't say it any better.
And if any board member suspects that they don't have something that somebody else has, call them. because we are allowed to talk to each other about anything PCJWSA.
That's right, one-on-one.
One-on-one.
Well, and I would say that my commitment is that you guys will all equally have all the information I have. That's my commitment to
and
you.
And the same information to
and
each person.
And the same information to each person.
And that's why.
And I know that Michelle did too. The dynamic from the past helps me to understand what Tom was referring
so
to.
So, Tom, I think you've heard that you've got a lot of company then on your feelings like you don't have all the same information or didn't in the recent past. And I think, I hope you're also hearing that everybody wants the same information just like you do. Is that fair?
Fair.
Okay.
I'd ask John, one of my questions to John, do you remember what it was? In your interview?
I got asked a lot of questions. Help me out.
Trust.
Trust.
Yes. How do you regain trust?
Well, you don't lose it in the first place.
Well,
good answer. Yeah.
Good point.
But how do you regain trust?
You don't regain it.
If you haven't lost it,
trust is a hard thing to regain once it's lost. That's why you just work hard to not lose it in the first place.
Good. All right. So we've gone through the four bullets. Sean, that was a great summary statement you just made. I wish I'd recorded it. I'd use it again in other situations.
I want royalties.
I second that.
What I would suggest is that I'm going to make some notes, kind of a summary statement that I will provide to Carolyn so that she can share them with you all. And I would hope that there's enough gist and meaning in what I provide to Carolyn that along with these four bullet items that you put those on the agenda for subsequent board meetings and do a quick review and reminder on what we've talked about today, just so that you can start tracking progress on this essentially new start that we have as a board with John coming into the fold now. Is that something that you can do at a board meeting?
I like that idea, and I think what it also does is it communicates to the public that we're aware of this situation.
Exactly.
And we're working to improve it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's another indication of transparency. The public will be happy to know that you are working on improving as a board. So I'll make that available to you. It won't be much more than what's on paper, but a document,
sure.
A closing document. And I'm willing to wrap it up at this point if you are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are there any stones that we need to...
I think that Michelle found a class on advanced board member training and sent that information out to us. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to look at it.
It took us two emails back.
I'll try again. And it's just... It's 60 minutes,
yeah.
But I had a really hard time getting it out to individuals. So if you haven't seen it, I will try it again.
I did receive an email. I haven't looked at it.
Okay, so you probably got it. You haven't.
I haven't.
It's a YouTube meeting.
Can
you just watch
it? Yeah, I saw that.
You saw it. Okay, so Sean, you're the only one. I'll send it to you.
I could probably benefit from it.
The other thing I would add is there's a board duties and responsibilities workshop being put on towards the end of August nearby in Astoria, most of the day with George Dunkel, who's been doing this stuff for years. I find those in-person things really helpful because you hear stories from other board members and you realize that the things that we wrestle with around this table, you're not alone. And people are finding ways to make improvements just like you are. So it's always encouraging. So just a recommendation.
There are some recommendations in this most recent video that have to do with running meetings, and I've learned a couple of things, and I'll be a little sharper in the future.
Okay.
try to incorporate some of those.
Yeah, incorporate those. And
do you want to push that button for me?
Thank you, Rob.
It is 10:54 and we are adjourned. Okay.